Welcome to Saturday Morning Meeting for Suppliers, presented by 8th and Walton, the premier destination for supplier development, and sponsored in part by Dun & Bradstreet Credibility Corp, the leading provider of credit and credibility solutions for businesses. I'm Andy Shook, and thank you for joining us. The retail terrain is changing, as is today's consumer. Suppliers who want to be successful have to change with both. Today's show is about helping you improve your business so you keep up with the pace of change. First, we meet Tad Wilson of Toshiba Global Commerce Solutions to learn 6 reasons consumers are now in control. And then Lori Oliver talks with Melinda Emerson, America's number one small business lady. Melinda shares tips for small businesses and large suppliers, ways to assure your ongoing success regardless of changes to the retail terrain. And last is our brand new segment, Diversity in Retail. Dr. Adam Arroyos talks with Octavio Hinosa Mir, president of the National Hispanic Corporate Council. Today, it's not just the preferences of consumers that are changing. Consumer demographics themselves are changing as well. Joining me today for 6 Ideas in 6 Minutes is Tad Wilson of Toshiba Global Commerce Solutions. The topic is consumers in control. So before we get started, Tad, quickly set the scene. Tell us what Toshiba Global Commerce Solutions does.
So Toshiba GCS, or Toshiba, is the world's largest provider of point-of-sale solutions and retail transaction technology. So what that means is when you check out of a store at a large grocery store or a high-volume retailer like Walmart, you're using our hardware and our software.
Okay, great. So we've got 6 ideas. Number one is digital shopping is huge, but growth is getting harder to come by. What does that mean?
So if you've been in retail for any time, there's no points for pointing out that e-commerce or web shopping is huge. But what we're starting to see is the growth curve is bending. So where it used to be double-digit growth, Now we're seeing high single-digit year-over-year growth. We see this in the consumer research that we're doing, where consumers report flattening rates of shopping online. Not that it's shrinking or going away, but it's flattening out.
So are less people coming into it or are just less people using it?
I think as a percentage of spend, it's starting to hold steady. People know the categories where they want to buy. They know the types of missions that they want to fulfill online, and that's starting to stabilize. We've also had some recent challenges with fulfillment. So example, on Christmas 2013, when people ordered late, couldn't get their things, We're starting to bump up against those analog constraints of digital retail.
So number two, in harder to reach segments, digital desire outstrips digital actualization.
Right. And so that's a fancy way of saying There are segments where people want to buy online.
Right.
And
right.
they just aren't.
And I think we all have those, right?
We all have those. Yeah. Like for example, I would love to go online and say, you know what, here's my aftershave, here's this, here's my medicine, and I go. But if I have a cold, I want that now. I don't care that I can save $2 and buy it from Amazon. I'm going to the local Walmart.
Okay.
Another example might be clothing. Some people are very comfortable buying online. Others say it needs to lay right. It has to have the right hand, the right color, the right texture. And oh, by the way, if I want to return it, I don't want to have to go through the reverse logistics.
Right. So number three, in hardest segment, grocery digital is about personalization, not purchasing. Define that.
Grocery is one of those great examples of a very persistently store intensive segment.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about apparel and a little bit about health and beauty. Grocery is even farther off the charts in terms of, hey, people might be interested in buying online, but do they really believe that the person who's doing that picking is going to pick the freshest tomato or the best cut of meat or exactly the right ingredient for that recipe?
I think there are certain products within that grocery segment that you just don't trust that retailer to do it on a dot-com basis, right?
Absolutely. And we've seen that in countries where the penetration rate is higher. So if you look at the United States, about 1/3 of 1% of grocery category spend goes online. And almost all of that is from Ahold's Peapod technology. If you go to the UK, 5% of grocery category spend is online. Retailers like Tesco and Asda have north of 7 or 8%.
So they've kind of broken through those trust barriers.
They've broken through the trust barriers. And the way they've done it is they've figured out for whom can I make a substitution and how do I make that? So if you give me your shopping list and I'm not sure exactly what I need to provide, I either make a good choice or I contact you in some way. They figured out how to replicate you better.
Yeah. So number four, mobile is the linchpin of bridging digital and physical shopping.
So we talk a lot about m-commerce, and the picture we get is sometimes people buying on their phones. We think this is actually overstating it. M-commerce tends to be people buying on tablets. And somebody who's sitting in their house on a tablet is very different than somebody who is in the street or in their office or in a store a phone. So phones are pervasive. They're heavily personal. They go everywhere with us. But if you look at the top uses of a phone in a shopping context, number one is find a store. I have a device that lets me shop anywhere. Let me get back inside the four walls.
Okay.
If you look at what's the number one use inside a store, it's to find price, to find the location of an item, or to get product reviews so I know I'm buying the right thing. It's really not about making the purchase on that mobile device. Hmm. It's about using that mobile device as an equalizer for information.
Interesting. So you talked about shopping becoming pervasive. As it does that, brands must master context, not just reach.
Right. And this is a subtle point around, if you think about the technology that serves retailers, in the past, it's been fairly passive. So for example, if you go into a store, your interaction with the product and the brand is mostly in your control. And then when you get to the checkout, they're fielding the technology and you interact with through an associate. With mobile, there's a one-to-one relationship. You interact with the brand on your device, your software, but it's technology that they put out there that you access. We're going way to the other side of that distribution, where instead of lots and lots of people going through the same device or mobile taking that to one-to-one, now it's all the touch points in your home become a point for brand interaction. And this imposes a huge responsibility on the brands. So let's, for example, if you're at home and a brand says, I want to reach you, where you are in the house, what you're doing, what day it is, what time it is, all of these will influence how ready and willing you are to receive that brand message. So the importance of context imposes a huge responsibility on the brands to exercise it responsibly.
Wow, that's great. So number six is, in this digital cross-channel world, stores remain a competitive advantage.
Absolutely.
Still brick and mortar. They're still winning?
They are a critical part of a brand's mix of ways to reach consumers. If you look at most retailers that have stores and websites, the websites are getting the growth, but the stores are where the profit gets generated. The most profitable consumers for brands, though, are ones that jump across those channels.
Okay.
So I shop sometimes in the store, sometimes on the website, sometimes on my phone. And that's really a customer who's saying, I want to engage with the brand anywhere. There are things that are still better done in a store than in any other venue. Touch the product, sample the product, engage with an associate who may know more than I do. And this is an incredibly powerful point. Look at someone like Walmart. And Walmart is always described as being in this battle with Amazon. Walmart has 11 times the distribution capacity of Amazon in their stores and in their supply chain. They have 7 times the available to sell inventory. That is a competitive advantage.
So, Tad, thank you so much for coming in and shedding some light on today's consumer. That's it for 6 Ideas in 6 Minutes. Saturday morning meeting for suppliers. We'll be right back.
GigWalk is transforming how work gets done. As the leading mobile workforce management platform, GigWalk provides companies with mobile tools and a data-driven approach to improving business efficiency. Leading brands and retailers use GigWalk to manage their field teams and to mobilize 750,000 GigWalkers to collect data intelligence about their business and brands. Are the shelves stocked? Are my products priced competitively? Are the correct promotions in place? Visit us at GigWalk.com to learn more. GigWalk, make work better.
Mach 1 Financial Group has moved to Bentonville. Now we're easier to find and even better equipped to assist you with your financial needs. Visit us at our new location, 408 North Walton Boulevard, and check out our state-of-the-art Lunch and Learn conference room.
Walton can help you become a smarter supplier with webinars and classes, services like custom training, consulting, HR solutions, and staffing. Visit www.aithandwalton.com to find out how you could become a better partner to Walmart.
Sales analysts, build your skills fast with Aith and Walton's core classes. Order them together and save 10%. Go to aithandwalton.com/classes.
I'm Loria Oliver, and welcome to Retail Her. Today, I'm talking to Melinda Emerson, also known as America's number one small business lady. Welcome, Melinda.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Melinda, I know we have a lot of suppliers that watch our show, and they're probably sitting there wondering, you have such a great social media following. You're so well knowledgeable about social media. What tips can you give to them who are struggling in that arena?
Well, the first thing I would tell anyone that wants to get started with social media is that they really only need to focus on one social media platform at a time. A lot of people are not being affected with social media because they're killing themselves doing Facebook, Pinterest, Google+, LinkedIn, Snapchat, Periscope, just stop. Figure out the place where your best target customer spends the majority of their time online, and then you need to focus on that social media platform too. The second thing I would say is, as you are getting started with social media, you have to use what I call the help mantra. Okay. So the first thing I want you to do is only share helpful information, period. Mm-hmm. Don't be out here bashing customers, bashing competitors. All I want you to do is be helpful, add value to the conversation. The second thing I want you to do is engage people. Right? It's still about like, know, and trust, even online.
Right.
And when you meet somebody face to face, it takes 3 interactions to turn that interaction into commerce. Well, online, it's at least 7. And I've seen estimates as high as 21 quality interactions. So you have to thank people for sharing your content, engage with people, learn some people's names. You've got to show up consistently online to become a trusted resource. The third thing I want you to do is listen carefully. Don't assume you know the culture of the different social media sites. Facebook people do not want to be communicated to like their Twitter people.
Right.
They don't like all that hashtag stuff.
Exactly.
We do over on Twitter. And then the last thing I want you to do is promote yourself with care. Nobody wants to be sold to, and they especially don't want to be sold to online. So I want you to share other people's content at a 4-to-1 ratio of your own. So be sweet and retweet other people's stuff. That's what I want you to do. Because what you want to do when you first start using social media is friend raise. So if you want friends, you must be friendly, right?
I guess so.
That's how it works in social media.
Yeah. Also, what about for a small business owner who is struggling right now on the brink of failure, afraid of failure? What tips would you have for them to kind of turn things around?
Well, you know, there's really 5 reasons why small businesses fail to me. The number one reason is because people weren't realistic about what their life was going to be like running their business. They thought some magic fairy was going to come and lock and unlock the door every day at their business. So I want you to really focus on why you started this business,
okay,
right? The second reason why small businesses fail is because people have no network to sell to. 90% of all small businesses get business from referrals. Mm-hmm. So it is really about building your network long before you need them. Nobody wants to hear from someone they haven't talked to in 3 years and wants to sell them something,
right?
So make sure you nurture your network before you need them.
Okay.
The third reason why small businesses fail is because every small business owner I know wants to chase new business. Mm-hmm. Small business lady, how can I get new customers? Is like the most common question that I have emailed. Here's a newsflash for you. How about you try to keep the customers you already have? Work on nurturing your customers. Use email to keep in touch. Value your customers. Thank them. Call them. Get feedback from them. They are your best possible source for more revenue, because anybody will buy something once, but the goal is to get them to buy it over and over again.
Right.
So focus on your existing customers. The fourth thing I want you to do is have a specific customer that you're going after. Mm-hmm. If everybody can use your product or service, nobody will. So you've got to have a specific niche target customer, and you've got to make sure that you specialize in solving that customer's problem, right? Because who makes more money, your cardiologist or your primary care physician?
The cardiologist.
Right. So you better be trying to figure out how to be the cardiologist for what you do.
Okay.
Right? Because they get to charge more money.
Yeah.
Cardiologists drive Lamborghinis, you know?
How do you feel about small businesses using focus groups to do that? Is that a good way to narrow it down?
I think small businesses should absolutely do focus groups. But you know what? You can do them online.
Okay.
You can do them on Facebook or Twitter. All you need to do is get to, people love to give you their opinion.
Right.
So ask them for it. And don't be afraid to give them some little incentive for doing it. It could be an ebook, a product sample, whatever. But get feedback. Don't just go on your opinion and your mama's opinion. That's not enough information for you to be in business and stay in business.
Right.
And then the last reason why small businesses fail, and this is probably the most deadly reason, if you don't manage your household with a budget, you will not manage your business with one. Mm-hmm. And successful businesses are run based on up-to-date financial information.
Okay.
By the 15th of the month, you need to know how well your business did last month so that you can make adjustments. Mm-hmm. You can figure out what you got to do. And I don't believe in these annual sales goals. I believe in 30-day sales goals, because if you know how much money you got to make this month, you know how much money you got to make this week.
Right.
And so that's what you got to focus on. Don't let your fear of math be the reason why you don't know what's really going on in your business. So it's all about the numbers, because profit is how we keep score in business.
Well, great advice. Thank you so much again.
You're welcome.
Finally, our last question on Retail Her, one of my very favorite, is we have a photo of you as a young girl. Looking back on that young girl today, what tips would you tell her on how to navigate this life?
You know, if I had an opportunity to have a conversation with myself when I was a little girl, there's a couple of things I would say. Number one is, a good idea is still a good idea 3 weeks from now.
Mm.
You know, be patient. And what God has for you is for you. And no one else will ever be able to take away that away from you.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I would just say is that don't sweat the small stuff, and everything's small.
Right. I agree with that.
That is really, you know, sitting here now, that is advice I wish, everything is actually going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's it. That's what I would tell myself.
Well, thank you so much for being here today, Melinda. How can people find more information about you?
If you